evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 7th, 2014. A majority of lawmakers from the three states of Equatoria petitioned President Kiir over a controversial security bill passed by Parliament.
This document has been very controversial. What we had wanted to salvage is this bill is having the potential to divide our people. We shouldn't be the case. Any bill which comes here in the parliament should be discussed.
And residents of Juba feel the effects of the chronic fuel shortage in Juba town.
It's a kind of challenging because when you wake up in the morning, you start to brush your teeth, organizing, going for what comes into your mind is how am I going to get to the place of work?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
East African leaders have been meeting in the Ethiopian capital for the past 2 days to encourage President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to find a solution to the 10-month-old conflict in South Sudan. Kenyan Foreign Minister Amina Mahmoud is optimistic the two warring parties will reach a deal on the thorny issue of a proposed transitional government for South Sudan.
Talks are going well, and we have just adjourned for a little while to allow for the parties to have direct discussions. So basically we're expecting, some good results. Acceptable to the parties, because we are just facilitators. So a good result is one that's acceptable to the parties.
That's Kenyan Foreign Minister Amina Mahmoud speaking from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, this past hour.
Members of parliament from the Equatorial region warn that any attempt by President Kiir to enforce the national security bill as passed by parliament may divide the country even further. Lawmakers from the three states of Equatoria say the bill gives security agents too much power. As Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the MPs are calling on the president to send the bill back to parliament for revisions.
The Equatorial Parliamentary Caucus comprises at least 100 MPs of the overall 320 MPs in the national legislature. A 3-page letter signed by nearly half of the caucus members has been delivered to the president. It urges Mr. Kiir not to sign the bill into a law for a number of reasons. Julius Ajeo Moelinga is the acting chairperson of the Equatorial Parliamentary Caucus in the National Parliament.
This document has been very controversial. What we had wanted to salvage is this bill is having the potential to divide our people. We shouldn't be the case. Any bill which comes here in the parliament should be discussed and then should be finally passed in such a way as to unite us, not to divide us. As members of the party, we are very concerned. And procedurally, yes, we feel that there are some steps which have been skipped.
The Equatorial Parliamentary Caucus joins a chorus of national and international activists challenging numerous articles in the bill which they say violate the national constitution and international standards by giving security operatives excessive power. For example, they say the powers to search, arrest, detain, and confiscate given to security agents under the National Security Bill do not conform with the Police Service Act 2008 and the Court of Criminal Procedure Act 2008. And the letter states that sweeping powers given to the members of the security service put them above the law and violates the fundamental rights and freedoms of South Sudanese citizens. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway have also called on President Kiir not to sign the bill into a law. Attorney Wek Attorney is the spokesman in the office of the President, Salva Kiir. He told the VOA that the President's office has received the letter.
The President will look at the petition in a due course and will not ignore it.
For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
Still in Juba, commuters and motorists are struggling with an ongoing fuel shortage, which is pinching pockets and leaving fuel pumps dry. Long queues and even longer walks are the order of the day in the nation's capital. VOA fellow Michael Atit reports from Washington.
Wani Michael is a South Sudanese who works for one of the many civil society organizations in Juba. Every morning, he drives to his office, but what was once a simple routine now makes Wani feel like a victim. Since the recent fuel shortage began, he must spend hours queuing at the petrol stations to fill his tank. On same days, he gets to the office as late as 10 or 11 a.m.
It's a kind of challenging. When you wake up in the morning, you start to brush your teeth, organizing, going for work. What comes into your mind is, how am I going to get to the place of work?
These days, hundreds of pedestrians who used to board commuters' buses and vans to go to work are now walking along Juba streets and roadways. Others scramble for a seat on a few commuters' vehicles that manage to secure fuel. The businesses most hard hit by the crisis is that of the taxis and operators of motorcycle transport, commonly known as bodabodas. Commuter taxi and bodaboda services are the cheapest and the fastest means of transport used by the most people in Juba and in several states capitals of South Sudan. Here are some voices of commuters, drivers and bodaboda operators explaining how the crisis affects them.
The fuel stations along the Jebel Road have no fuel in them. You see a fuel station, but when you go up to it, you find there is no fuel. Drivers used to go to a fuel station and get a full tank that would keep them going for 3 or 4 days. But now you can only get one jerrycan, and you have to go back again tomorrow and stand in the queue to get fuel. There is fuel outside the petrol stations, but it's very expensive. So we, the drivers, decided to increase the bus fare. We used to charge our passengers 2 South Sudanese pounds, but we decided to start charging them £3 instead. A jerrycan of diesel is 200 or 220 South Sudanese pounds on the black market.
Last month, officials with the Minister of Petroleum, Mining and Industry tried to explain the sources of the fuel shortages. They said there had been delays in the delivery of a letter credit to Qatar National Bank, or QNB, which would facilitate payments for fuel imports in Kenya to South Sudan. And they said government efforts to crack down on illegal clearance agents at Nimule Customs Office have also contributed to the problem. But South Sudanese government spokesperson Michael Makwey says the main source of the delay is entirely within South Sudan.
What brought about all these technicalities is simply because of there had been a lot of clearing agents, and these clearing agents have been reduced, and as such the number decreased and they could not deliver in time.
Back on the streets of Juba, official explanations are no use to people struggling to make a living each day. Ofono Robert is a bodaboda operator at Konyokonyo Market in Juba.
We buy the black market, another one we mix with the water. If you're power in the motorcycle, no working.
Despite government increased effort to sort out the problem, it is now almost a month since the fuel shortage began. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
That report on fuel shortage in Juba was prepared by Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Meanwhile, Lake State residents face a different problem. People in Rumbek are living in fear after a spate of killings in the town. Locals complain that the state government is doing little to curb the violence, and some state officials say they need help from Juba to bring the situation under control. Former Rumbek Central County Commissioner Matur Majok says a senior inspector from the State Infrastructure Ministry was gunned down on Tuesday by unknown gunmen. He blames the latest homicide in the region on a deep-rooted culture of revenge killings.
He was going to buy the cow from the auction. When they come back from auction, they got somebody on the way who was carrying a gun, and immediately opened the gun and shot him. Is a revenge. It is common because it was they kill a chief, a prior chief, which is brother of the governor of every state. Secondly, they kill many people. They kill another executive chief also in Mumbai, and they kill such chief. And he just question, he just reached up to town now. Today, they told they kill the senior official, the senior staff. And that is where fighting is just approaching to the town slowly.
Father Henry Jidudu is a Catholic priest who lives in Rumbek. He says the town is
very insecure, according to me, because there is shootings everywhere most of the time at night. People feel very insecure. They are not actually free to move beyond 8. In fact, when it gets dark around 7:30, some people, traders, begin closing down their shops.
25-year-old Daniel Juke says the perpetrators of the crimes usually get away literally with murder.
3 days ago, somebody was just shot near the market. Their tail and went away and he was not caught.
Juke complains that the local authorities are not doing enough to stop the killings. State lawmaker Veronica Umjima Phillips agrees. She says the government has failed to provide security to the people. She blames the killings on lawlessness and an ingrained culture of revenge. She says she feels powerless to do anything to help because the state legislature has not been in session for weeks.
Now we have 45 days and the parliament is not working. When there is anything going like that, then the parliament will debate on that issue. Then they come out with a law which can even help the people of the state. And that thing is not there.
Umjima says even lawmakers like her are too afraid to speak about what is happening in the state. They feel threatened by the insecurity.
MPs are in the secret places. You sleep in your house. Then sometimes you go and sleep somewhere because you are in fear.
Adeu Deng is a mother of three who also says that fear is part of her daily life. She says the security is becoming worse by the day and insecurity is affecting people's lives in unexpected ways.
Life here has become difficult. Prices in the market are very high. Flour, sugar, and everything. Our farms are destroyed, and kids are getting sick. They don't have clean water. It is difficult to provide food at home. If you go to a hospital, many kids are malnourished because there is no proper feeding.
Shadrach Ball, also a lawmaker, insists the local authorities are trying their best to end the killings and restore a sense of safety in Rumbek. But, he says, the situation has gotten out of hand. He says the government in Juba should intervene and support the state authorities to restore calm. He says for that to happen,
the disarmament has to be effected by the state authorities with the reinforcement to be made by the central government. So state authorities cannot go about it single-handedly. There is a large number of illegal held firearms with the civil population, which is not easy to be gotten hold of by the few forces that are deployed in the state.
Rumbek County Police Commissioner Kosia Kedit says local security officials are doing their best to end the killings, but he says the problems are not unique to Rumbek.
And these things are happening also in America. The police officer cannot be asked about the crimes happening in that area or in that place. Which is the follow-up? There are cases which happen here, and they are being ended here.
Residents of the town simply hope that someone can bring the situation under control and end the senseless killings and insecurity in the town so that they can go back to living without constant fear.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, traders in Bor go on strike, at least temporarily. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you approve of having domestic pets in your household?
I would not approve of having a domestic pet in my house because personally I'm asthmatic and I don't like animal skin.
Yes, I do. And I have a dog. I love it. I don't know. I'm so used to a dog. And it's one, it's friendly. Two, it's security-wise, it's very good.
Yes, because sometimes they are very lovely. They distract someone. And distracting someone from the problems of the house. They also someone quite engaged because they sometimes do stupid things.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Traders in Bor The capital of Jonglei State closed their shops this morning in protest over government failure to ensure that local business can access United States dollars to enable them to import essential commodities. Markets opened at midday local time after government made a new promise to resolve the issue within 5 days. But as Philip Thornaleo reports for VOA from Juba, traders say they will not keep operating without making a profit.
Abraham Chol, the secretary of Jonglei State Traders Union, says members of the business community lost everything during the fighting for control of Bor during December 2013 and January of this year. Chol says that as part of a government plan to help traders rebuild, state authorities pledged in April to secure a letter of credit which will enable traders to get United States dollars from the central bank in Juba. But Chol says he and his colleagues have waited in vain for those funds.
The traders agree that if the state government any traders outside of the state that can provide better services, business services to the citizens of the state, then they decide to close and allow the government to bring those companies to run the market and provide business services to the citizens.
Chol says some traders in Juba are claiming to be from Jonglei states and are being given the letter of credit instead of those who actually operate in Bor. For many of his fellow Jonglei state-based business owners, Chol says this was the final straw and what eventually led to the protest. But the state officials intervened and organized a meeting early today with traders. A 5-day ultimatum was issued to resolve the standoff and shops reopened after 5 hours. But Chol insists that traders will reserve the right to close their shops in the future.
In South Sudan, we don't have factories that produce goods to supply the market. So we depend on the foreign countries to export goods to be sold in the market. Now there is a shortage of dollar in the commercial bank and the central bank. So when traders buy dollar in the black market, the prices go up in the market because the black market rate is 5.6 as we speak.
It is estimated that traders in Bor lost about 300 million South Sudanese pound during the fighting for control of the town, some 200 kilometers south of Juba in December 2013 and January of this year. Chol says the matter boils down to basic economics. 5.6 South Sudanese pound buys $1 in Bor, and that is forcing traders to increase prices on basic food items in the market to avoid losses. They have reached a breaking point where even more drastic measures may be considered.
If the government is not cooperating with us, then we can go and do business somewhere in the south where we will be more secure and also cooperate with the government officials.
Judy Jonglei Boyeris, the Minister of Information in Jonglei State, says the government is doing everything to help the traders. Boyeris says State Governor John Kung Nguyen has written to the Central Bank of South Sudan asking that officials stop issuing letters of credit to Juba-based traders from Jonglei State. He urged them to prioritize the flight of traders offering services to returnees in Bor.
The letter is being processed. We don't know what will be happen and when. This is something to be followed up. And we convince them to continue resuming their work normally and the shops to be open.
Boyeri says the state government has no jurisdiction over allocations of letters of credit to traders, and he won't predict what will happen during the 5-day ultimatum period. Both Chol and Boyeri say the loan arrangement to cut about those who lost entire business during the fighting in Bor is unrelated to today's protest and is being handled as a separate matter. For VOA News, I am Pilitona Leu in Juba.
Medical officials and locals in the BA say they are concerned about the poor state of healthcare in the area. They say lack of financial support and a scarcity of even basic medication means healthcare providers are stretched to the limit in Abia. VOA fellow Nabil Biajo has this report, which was written by Jacob Achek in Juba.
Mary Nyamo is typical of patients seeking treatment at Abia Health facilities. Recently, she was admitted to the Agok medical treatment, suffering from a severe case of malaria. She is grateful for the treatment she is receiving at the Agok clinic, but says most people are not as fortunate. Mary says medicines were brought, but were brought by car. They were not brought by the plane. And there is a lot of rainfall and flooding in our villages. So sicknesses like malaria and typhoid have become too common. The lack of medicines and other healthcare resources is just the latest challenge for the troubled Abyei region. Officials say that currently there is only one hospital and the few resources that are available in medical facilities often must be reserved for use during emergencies. Dr. Monitwig Byong, Director General for Health in Abyei Area, says the reason is simple. There is no budget for Abyei Area health services.
And the big challenge we have now is the common diseases like malaria, gastroenteritis and upper chest infection, where whatever little we get from the Minister of Health usually get drained off. Because the area is big. The area is serving not just only Abyei area now. Part of the Tooch County, they come to us. So we are covering a very wide area.
Monitwig says there are 15 functioning health facilities in the Abyei region, but the majority of them are in the southern part of the region. This means there are very few health services offered in northern Abyei. Monitwig says the Abyei area is getting a block grant from the government of South Sudan, but most of those funds must go toward paying salaries for Abyei area health workers. He says operating costs for the hospital, clinics, schools and other government institutions consume the majority of funds for health services in Abyei. People like Nyangyang Deng, a resident of Ajakwach, say the healthcare situation is getting so bad. Many people just choose to stay at home when they get sick. She says some patients are told by healthcare workers to buy medicines, but they don't have the money to buy them. Majok Agok Aliap is a nurse at the Agok Medical Clinic. She says it seems like they're fighting a losing battle, but health workers are doing their best to help the community cope with increasing illnesses. She says they have completely run out of medicines, including painkillers, and citizens are complaining that maybe the workers are selling the drugs for commercial purposes. Dr. Monitwig says all of the staff in the health department are stretched too thin. For example, 3 of the 4 doctors assigned to the entire Abyei region are currently in Agok village, confronting the heavy patient caseload there. There have been some signs of hope. In June 2014, the administration of Abyei area received medications provided by the government of South Sudan. Also, the international humanitarian organization Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is supporting health officials who are still struggling to regroup following the May 2011 violence that devastated most of the region's health facilities.
The challenge is the resources to help them, to aid. That is, I mean, things like drugs, things like lab equipment, which we lack. Because what we had was all completely destroyed and no replenishment. So these are the challenges.
Monitwig says the National Ministry of Health is aware of the challenges in Abyei. In fact, there are plans to build more primary healthcare centers in the region, but budget constraints mean that construction has not been able to commence. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Abyei, we move back to Juba. A South Sudanese artist has launched a new social media initiative called Wave South Sudan. The online campaign is asking every South Sudanese to post photos on Facebook and Twitter of themselves holding South Sudan flag. The goal is to stimulate national pride and unity to promote peaceful coexistence. Mungume Devs Rakarinj reports from Juba.
As a musician, 30-year-old Manase Mathiang often uses his craft to bring people together for positive reasons, perhaps to dance and sing along to his music. But Mathiang launched the Wave South Sudan social media initiative for a more sobering reason. He has lost several family members during the conflict in South Sudan and says his project is a call to his fellow countrymen and women to forget the past and unite for the common good.
Everybody in South Sudan, no matter what your tribe is, whatever, no matter what your political affiliation is, no matter whatever, they still love the flag. If you love South Sudan, you will love the flag and you'll be proud of it. So that's where we came up with the hashtag Wave South Sudan campaign.
Mathiang says he has been overwhelmed by the responses so far. He says many people, mainly teenagers and young adults, have posted photos with the Wave South Sudan hashtag on their Facebook walls and Twitter pages to express solidarity with the campaign. One of the campaign's early supporters is 23-year-old Ria William, a civic education officer with the Western Equatoria-based NGO Mundri Relief and Development Association. William, whose social media persona is Biang Shan Santa, believes deep-rooted tribalism is at the heart of South Sudan's trauma. She hopes Mathiang's initiative will make a change.
He is promoting peace, and he's not from my tribe. I would like to associate people who are not from my tribe, you know, to show that, you know, we want to work together, not as I'm a Muru, I'm a Dinka, I'm a Anuer or whatever. I joined because I want to see peace. I mean, I want to see peace in our country. Without peace, we cannot develop.
She joined the campaign 3 days after it began. Mathiang says the campaign helped him cope with his own grief and loss. It also confronts what he thinks is a disturbing social media phenomenon.
Since the beginning of this conflict, it has been heartbreaking to me to see how so many of our South Sudanese youth, especially those in the diaspora, are using the social media for negative reasons and to actually add more fire to the conflict that we have.
26-year-old Luang Stephen Chuol says he hopes Mathiang's initiative will spawn other social media campaigns with positive messages.
Let us preach peace in social media. Post anything concerning about peace, not concerning about any violence, any what. Let us not spread any rumors to create tension between us.
The warring parties are expected to form a transitional government, which is widely seen as a key step to end nearly 11 months of fighting and restore peace in South Sudan. But Mathiang says there is only one way to reach a lasting solution.
The politicians might, at the end of the day, reconcile amongst themselves. But the most important peace that we need in South Sudan is peace amongst ourselves as the citizens. Politicians come, politicians go. Let's not dwell so much on them, but dwell much on uniting ourselves.
One photo posted on Mathiang's Facebook page received more than 100 likes. There are also supportive comments like this one from Abraham Thong Tong, who writes, "Good job you are doing, bro. Likewise, all South Sudanese should be like you. Well done." And Ding Dan says, "True that, bro. 100% loyal fan. One nation, one people, one blood." For VOA News, I am Mugumedo Siruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this week. We now leave you with the song City of Laws by Ugandan musician Eddie Kenzo. We've been listening to Eddie Kenzo and the song City Alosi. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
Thanks, Lucy, for co-hosting the show. I can see everybody in the studio here is dancing, including my producer, Gwen. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend. We hope you can join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.